KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akkwan. The Tlinedi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. The tidelands where our studios sit are now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots, but they were once an embarking point for fishing and hunting grounds, and to gatherings in other villages, and a place where children played on the beaches and learned to row in the harbor. In sharing this history, KTOO hopes to honor the ancestors and the descendants of the Akkwan. We realize those families who have never relinquished their ownership and stewardship of the land and waterways and continue to cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront for today and for future generations. We'd also like to take a moment to say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunash Cheesh to Vera Starbird, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who also gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's the first week of the month and time for our check-in with the Juno Police Department. So joining me now is Lieutenant Jeremy Weske. Welcome back to the show, Lieutenant.
Thanks, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here today. So I would like to kick things off by asking about one of your dispatchers, because I understand they recently really went above and beyond to help a mom in need. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, I'm happy to. It got posted recently because she got a stork pin, which is something that you get as a dispatcher if you deliver a baby on the phone, but it actually happened back in March. A friend called in, her friend was having a home birth, and there was some concern for the baby's health as it was being delivered. And the dispatcher, I listened to the audio of it. They were super calm, collected, walked the friend and the mom through the process. And within, you know, a minute, the baby had come out, was starting to breathe and turn purple and look great. And you could just kind of hear the joy and emotion and the relief on the call from the mom and the friends who were there. It's certainly a unique and rare experience for dispatchers, and it was really neat to be able to listen to. I'm happy that went so well.
Right, and so shout out to Alex Vicario for her actions there. How did she know what to do and what to say and what to advise?
Oh well, first of all, our dispatchers are have some extensive training. They spend months and months in training. Part of that is going over these worst case scenarios. Going through talking someone through CPR, talking someone through childbirth. And then on top of it, they have cards that are made for them that they can flip to in the event of an emergency. And that card runs them through the main talking points, the main things they need to focus on, so they can guide someone along. What that card doesn't do, which our dispatchers do a great job of, is maintaining their composure. You know, that card can't tell you to maintain your composure, and that's a very stressful situation. I got a little amped up just listening to it, and to listen to her just remain completely calm was really impressive.
Yeah, it really made me appreciate the level of stress that dispatchers must face every shift, because all of the calls that they get are someone who's having an emergency. So I don't know how they hold up under that kind of pressure.
I would have to agree. It's very it's amazing.
Well, I'm happy it all worked out, and so congrats to all. And I'm happy that Alex was honored with the stork pin. I thought that was really cool. I didn't know that was a thing that dispatchers got when they helped deliver a baby. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too.
Turning now to the next item on your list. Sounds like we've got some bad guys out there posing as JPD officers trying to scam folks out of their money. What's up with that?
Yeah, I think for a while here, we've all been experiencing some scam phone calls, some scam texts. Recently, they have taken the step of starting to impersonate JPD officers. So we just want to remind people of a couple things. One, the Juno Police Department will never call you, will never text you asking for money. There is no function here where we would call you and demand money. That same thing goes for a lot of other organizations that are being spoofed in these scams. You know, the IRS will ask you for money, but not in the way that's happening in the scams. Certainly when you're asked for money, it's not going to be in the form of gift cards or anything like that. A lot of these scams have to do with sending somebody gift cards or wiring somebody money. If you see anything like that, if you get any texts, any phone calls that seem out of the blue, you should be trying to look up a number for that organization online, whether that's the Chino Police Department or a national organization or your bank, and call them on your own accord and see if you can verify that information. The spoofs are getting really sophisticated. The scams are getting sophisticated. They're starting to look more realistic. I know that I've seen some personally that are starting to look a little more realistic. And so the best bet is if you aren't expecting a call like that, you should verify it before you engage with that. And even before you click any link that you get in a text message or anything like that, just try and get a number that you find yourself, call that number and verify.
And just a reminder to everyone that Chief Ed Mercer does not speak with a Southern accent.
Yes, that's a great point. He does not.
I read that online. Somebody tried to fake Ed Mercer. That was a dead giveaway. At least it would be for me, but maybe not everyone's talked to him.
That's true.
Next up, in October, we observe a number of events. It's Filipino History Month, and it's also National Pedestrian Safety Month, which is one of the things I think you wanted to discuss today. What is the message for the public from Juneau Police Department during Pedestrian Safety Month?
Yeah, I think this is a good time for a reminder. We have unfortunately had a few pedestrian involved collisions lately, and we're getting into the darker days of the year, of course, and so our safety measures become all the more important as it gets darker outside. A lot of these are common sense, but just the main things that we would tell people is, one, be cognizant of what you're wearing. If you're wearing all dark clothing, you're going to be really hard to see. If you have the ability to wear something reflective, that, of course, is preferable. But if you're in dark clothing and you don't have something reflective on, be all the more aware that you're near impossible to see at night, especially if you're in an unlit area. If you're going to cross the street, make sure you're using a crosswalk, preferably a lit crosswalk. If you're in a crosswalk that has a button that you can push to activate the lights above it, use that. Don't just cross in the crosswalk without them. Those lights go a long way to making sure drivers are paying attention to you. And then one thing that I do for myself, if I'm crossing the street, one thing that I tell my kids to do is, even if you have the right of way, even if you are at that crosswalk, before you step into the roadway, make sure that you make eye contact with the drivers and get acknowledgement that they're going to let you pass. The problem being a pedestrian is you may have the right of way, but you're going to lose the battle every time if you get hit by a car. So take the extra second, stop, make sure they're paying attention to you, and then cross the roadway. And I would also say to drivers, be careful. Don't be distracted, whether that's texting is the one that we hear most about, but you can be distracted by being on a phone call. You can be distracted by talking to your passengers. You can be distracted because you're pretending that you're trying out for The Voice and singing your heart out in the car. Just be extra aware when you're making turns. Make sure you're checking crosswalks before you make that turn, and just be careful.
Do you have a favorite high-vis item or combination of items or something that you think is particularly effective that you would recommend?
You know, the easy button is, a lot of sneakers now come with reflective pieces to them. We give out little stickers and clips and things to put on backpacks for kids. I've seen some people wearing coats that... they look like a ghost. They lit up so bright. It was pretty impressive. I don't really have anything specific, but a lot of our gear now comes with some reflective material. And if nothing else, just grab one of those tags and put it on yourself.
Sure. Yeah. I also would add that a light up collar for your dog is a good idea as well.
That's a great idea. Agreed.
I remember when I very first started working here at KTOO, a colleague from my former job called me up one night and she was begging me to get a PSA in rotation about pedestrian safety. And it was a dark, rainy night and I had just driven home myself. It was right after 5 o'clock. There was a lot of car traffic and foot traffic and it was very difficult to see. So I imagine as a public safety officer, a law enforcement officer, you probably get a lot of feedback like that.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, we know from driving ourselves, so you get that rain, which is unfortunately not uncommon here in Juneau. And you're getting blinded by other headlights in the road, and it just can be really difficult to see. So definitely a good reminder for everybody, drivers and pedestrians alike.
I agree. And finally, last but not least on your list today, Juneau JPD unclaimed property. So what is that and what do you do with it?
Yeah, so if we have unclaimed property, the unclaimed property sits for 4 months. If we know who the owner is, we'll send a letter to that person, at least to an address that we can find to let them know we have the property. After 4 months, if that unclaimed property is under $100 in value, it is put aside for destruction. If it's over $100 in value, it gets put up for auction. The list of items that are going to be up for auction will be sent out kind of the same way we do for a vehicle auction. So we'll put out an announcement about it. It'll be on our website. You'll be able to look at the property. And then it goes to auctions. Some things that are a little different are bikes. So if we have unclaimed bikes, those may go to a nonprofit organization. Firearms, they're dealt with a little bit differently. But also, if you are the finder of property and you turn it into JPD, you can put in a claim for it as well. I believe the process includes writing a letter to the chief of police asking to be considered the owner of the unclaimed property, and then a decision has to be made by the chief as to whether that will be honored. I know that happens a fair amount with bikes. Of course, cash is the other most common unclaimed property by the finder, but there is a process for that too.
Very interesting. All right. Well, thanks for the overview of JPD unclaimed property. That's good to know, I guess, for anyone who has turned something in or might have had something turned in on their behalf. So, Lieutenant Jeremy Wesky, thanks so much for taking the time to give us an update for the month of October. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we say goodbye?
Actually, one thing back to the unclaimed property that I forgot to mention, if you are missing something, the more detailed you can be with your description when you call in to ask if we have it, the more helpful that is. So serialized items, if you have a serial number, for your phone, if you have an IMEI number, those are both important things. And you can generally get the IMEI number through your provider. And we have, unfortunately, a lot of iPhones and other types of phones. And so if we don't have something identifying about it, that becomes more difficult. And then I don't know if we have time, but it was Suicide Prevention Month last month, and I wouldn't mind just talking about it for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
So a couple things I just wanted to discuss or to mention. It had to do with our youth. I talked to Aaron Surma, who's with NAMI, and he had a couple things that he thought would be good to pass along, and I agree. One is if you have firearms in your home, the best thing you can do with those is to lock them and get them away from an area where youth can get a hold of them. If you need gun locks, they have some available and you can contact the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition to get those. They'll give those out to you. If you have a student who is high school aged and they want to talk to somebody, there are free therapists through the Teen Health Center. If they're under 18, they do need to have your parental permission, but that's a great service that the health center provides for students who may need someone to talk to. And then if you're looking for help or just looking for some resources, JunoMentalHealth.org is a website that you can go to. It's updated regularly and lists organizations and individuals here in town who provide mental health services. So that's a good resource for people. And that was JunoMentalHealth.org. And then lastly, this was from Aaron, is talking about issues like suicide is helpful. So it can sometimes be a conversation that we don't want to have, especially with our with our children, or it can just be a little uncomfortable to start, but it's okay to talk about it. It's good to talk about it, and it can foster further communication if someone is suddenly feeling like they're depressed or they may want to hurt themselves. Knowing that that door has been open for them to talk about it is really helpful and may lead them to seek out some help before they make a terrible decision.
Thank you for the reminder of all of the those are all really great points, and thank you also as well for the reminder about the resources that our community has access to.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that. Well, thank you again, Lieutenant Jeremy Wesky, Juneau Police Department. I find your Facebook page to be really informative if I'm looking, you know, for what's going on with Juneau Police Department. And you guys have a non-emergency number you can call as well. So thanks again so much for coming in this month and giving us that update.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and this Thursday night, the debut of a new KTOO documentary, The Queens and Kings of Juneau, a story about people who found their chosen family and created a whole community here in town. So joining me now are Rasha McChesney. Hi, Rasha.
Hello, Shelley.
And Paige Sparks. Hi, Paige.
Hey there.
And Gigi Monroe. Hello, Gigi.
Hey, Shelley.
Hey. Well, Rasha and Gigi are both pretty Juneau famous, but Paige, you're relatively new here.
Paige is going to be Juneau famous soon enough. After people see this documentary, probably.
It's really, yeah, it's kind of hard to keep up with these two, but, you know, doing my best.
Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, of course. So I moved up here in January to be a new TV producer for KTOO. I'm thrilled to be a part of this community and, you know, very quickly got a friendship with many people in the office, Rasha especially, who invited me to a drag show, and I was blown away. I just was like, this has to be a piece. So I'm just really very glad to have the opportunity to be a part of the community and to have the drag community give their trust to me and Rasha to tell this story. And yeah, thanks for having me.
What's your role in the documentary?
So Rasha and I both produced it, and then I did a lot of the post-production work as well as the camera work.
Rasha, you are a reporter, of course, here at KTOO.
I am.
Among other things, other hats. What's what was your role in the documentary, or what was some of your experiences?
So Paige and I kind of split up. So she did a lot of, this was really fun because I'm used to being sort of the photojournalist on scene and also trying to get audio and also try to do interviews. And Paige has this phenomenal eye. So she just did all of these visual things, and I got to focus on interviewing people and really thinking about the parts of the narrative that we were going to need for her to fit together. And I am also from here. So it was like, I could, you know, be that person that's like, well, this is what the drag show looks like. And this is the story that I think is really interesting here. And I think we had a really sort of naturally good division of duties. Because there is a lot that goes into making a documentary, even a miniature documentary.
To say the least.
Yeah, just a few things.
And do you have a connection with the drag community apart from producing this film?
I think I'm just friends with a lot of people in the drag community. And as a photographer, it's one of my, you know, more sort of favorite things to show up and photograph in town, just because there's so much representation that you don't see anywhere else on the stage. So I've always really enjoyed showing up and photographing them, and have gotten closer to some members of the troupe, and yeah.
And now turning to Gigi Monroe, who really needs no introduction, but let's do one anyway. Rasha, would you do the honors? How would you describe Gigi?
James first or Gigi?
Well, we're going with Gigi today.
Okay. So I would say that Gigi Monroe is probably one of the most famous, if not the most famous, sort of drag queens in Juneau. And as I've done a lot of the deep dive into drag history in Juneau that I'm working on, Gigi's name keeps coming up as someone who brought the national sort of drag stage and ideals and standards and openness to Juneau. So Juneau had a drag scene before, but it was a lot of it was like bringing people down from Anchorage, and there were some people locally doing some sort of doing drag, but like smaller profile. And Gigi came to town and kind of got her bearings, and then just like exploded into what is now a really vibrant drag scene here. Yeah, that would be how I would introduce you. Is that appropriate, Gigi?
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up.
That and more. Well, welcome, Gigi. How do you feel about the premiere tomorrow?
Thanks. I am so excited. You know, I haven't even seen it yet.
Oh, our bad. It's a surprise for everyone, okay?
I was kind of wondering about that.
I'm super excited about it. I saw that, you know, I saw the teaser, the 30-second promo, and I was just like blown away with the story that I think will be told and the perspective and you know, just the slick editing. I mean, it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. I think that, I mean, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to being impressed. I'm sure I will be. And I think that the amount of care that went into, researching the story and interviewing people and talking to lots of different folks. I think that one thing I know for sure is that Rasha and Paige did their homework and really care about the community. So I think that we're all going to feel really well represented and just an honor to be, the subject of this documentary.
Well, I'm sure being on camera is nothing new to you, but what was the experience like working with our KTOO video team?
Well, I guess you're right in some ways that, like, I have done interviews before. I have done some work with filmmakers and TV and things like that. But I think I'm most impressed with just the professionalism. You know, that was an easy, slam dunk. Like, I knew that, they were very respectful and asked permission with everything that they wanted to do and made sure that everything was in bounds. And they wanted to do a really deep dive, like they said, into this story that's, I think, a lot of folks, really only know the surface of. When, somebody comes to a show, that's kind of their understanding of our community is what they see on stage or what they hear on the microphone for a couple hours on a Saturday night. And I think that there is a lot of backstory and there's a lot there that I'm just really excited that they took the time to get to know.
Well, I'm guessing that you might be one of the central characters of this documentary, because you are the central character of many drag show I've seen in town. But who are some of the other queens and kings that are featured?
I just want to say that, like, at the very beginning, sort of James and Gigi end up being a central character because, and I should have said this when I was introducing her, but Gigi is drag mom to this huge troupe in Juno. And when Paige and I went to that first show that we went to together, I don't know if you've never been to a drag show here, and even if you have been to a drag show here, I don't know that anybody really understands the variety of people that you're seeing on stage and how unusual that is. Like, you walk into this show and there is a white woman on stage and there is a queer person on stage and then there's an Indigenous person and then there's a Black person and then there's some people for whom gender is a completely different construct than the rest of us are used to. And we kind of went into this documentary with that driving question of, like, who did this? How did this happen? And we kept coming back to Gigi. And so Gigi is central, but we also talked for a while to Ricky Tagaban, whose stage name is Lutuya Hart. Who are some of your favorites, Paige? We talked to a lot of people.
We also spoke with Jose Cuervo. Britt, she has now moved to Washington, sadly, but she just really represents something that you don't see, which is drag kings. And that seems to be something that is a running theme in Juno specifically, that there is a lot of drag kings here. And I think that Gigi has really opened up the space so that, just like what Rasha was saying, everybody can participate. And I think the biggest takeaway that I really hope, or that Rasha and I really hope people get from this film, is that if you are going to go to a drag show in Juno, there's a good chance that you're going to see yourself represented on stage. And that seems to be a really important aspect to all of their shows. Hopefully, if you haven't been or haven't seen a virtual show, like, please do so. It is such a worth it experience.
What would you add to that, Gigi?
I think that you know, when I moved here 8 years ago, it was really important to me to take everything that I was taught as a young performer, drag queen in Atlanta, Georgia, about what it means to create a space and a family and how important inclusion is and having a welcoming attitude. Where, you know, I think, again, a lot of the stereotypes about drag queens is a cattiness and a judgmental and kind of this sorority of mean girls. And I was taught the power in being the exact opposite way and making space for everybody and showing respect and building relationships and building community. And I've seen the power of that. And I really wanted to do that here. So everything that I've done here has been in honor of that background that I have. And it's something that I am so proud of. Out of everything that I've done here, the community and the family that has been created as a result of the drag shows and the drag family is our biggest success. And it's my most proud moment.
I haven't seen the documentary yet either, but I imagine that's one of the central messages that's going to come through from the story. Paige and Rasha, what did you learn about the Juno drag community that maybe you didn't know before through the process of making this documentary?
Oh my gosh, I have one. This is like, because I asked every person that we talked to this question. I had this concept that drag was a thing, and I think maybe it's because I have a background in theater, that you sort of created a character and then you embodied that character. But it was somebody who was definitely separate from you that you had to sort of like learn to play as a role. And what I learned instead from pretty much everybody that I talked to was that they were actually exploring parts of themselves that they weren't really able to explore in other parts of their lives, which is one of the things that makes this community so radical and revolutionary in its inclusiveness, is that you give space to people who are exploring parts of themselves that they just aren't permitted to explore anywhere else. You cannot be a radically queer, gender fluid, you know, person just in, even I think just like in downtown at Rainbow Food sometimes, that you still stick out and people stare at you. And there's this space where you can go and people are doing it and they're doing it on stage and it's like covered in glitter. And so I would ask people like, oh, who's, what kind of girl is your character? And they would look at me just really blankly. And then I'd be like, what kind of girl are you? And then it would just spill out of them. And I think that to me was a really revolutionary thing that I learned in the process of making the documentary, was like, this isn't about a character. This is about these parts of yourself that you're exploring and then are brave enough to like put out in front of the world. That was really groundbreaking for me.
Yeah, I think that bravery thing is something that really hits home for me, because something that I really love about just the drag community is its fearlessness to just question the norm, right? Question what society has put in place to say, this is what girls look like, this is what boys look like, this is what you're supposed to wear, how you're supposed to act if you're this particular gender. And I've never agreed with that either. And I feel like drag is one of those art forms that really fully allows even somebody that's not necessarily brave enough to get on stage, even sitting in the audience, knowing that you're in a space that you're allowed to be whatever you want to be, is really, really special for me, and why I think it's important to embrace the drag community in a way that's so much more than just an entertainment. It is straight up a community. It is family. It's chosen family. It's very, very important on an emotional level for many people.
How would you respond to that, Gigi?
Oh, with a few tears and taking a moment. It's always like so cool to me to hear someone else actually see some of the things that I feel really deep inside, or, you know, the things that motivate me to continue doing this, after, I don't know, this is my 16th, 17th year doing it, you know, and to feel like, yes, somebody gets it. Like someone sees it, someone feels it, is so validating, so rewarding. The piece that you just said, Paige, about, you know, creating a chosen family, I think you know, my goal in having a show is that that audience gets to become part of a family that night. And not family in the, like, you know, kind of silly, like, saccharine, you know, cliche way, but like a real way that you can feel it. And maybe you don't even have words to describe what it is, but you can come into that space and you may not be in the show, but you still feel like it's okay to be yourself, whatever that is, and that everyone is welcome there and everyone has an equal place and an equal value. And that's celebrated like really deliberately. And, you know, we do it through music and dance and expressions and just being silly and having a moment to play together. And those things don't always have words to describe what they're like. But I think that what we've heard from audiences is that's like the thing that keeps people coming back. That's the thing that connects audience members who maybe would never connect in real life. But at a drag show, like, maybe, you know, maybe they sit together and they watch the show and they connect in a new way that they never thought they could.
Well, I know we've talked a lot about how COVID impacted or upended the drag scene, especially a couple of years ago or last year, and how you persevered through virtual shows and all vaccinated shows in person. And I'm sure that'll also be covered in the documentary. But what were some of the challenges of filming this during COVID?
You know, we actually... We got really lucky that first show that we went to. So before the Delta variant took over, when all of us were, you know, there was that like crucial like few months going into summer. It was like, wait a minute, if you're vaccinated, you can be around other people again. And there, the first in-person drag show, you had to be vaccinated and show your vax card to get in. And that was such a groundbreaking, interesting experience because, and I say groundbreaking because we had just been hunkered down for so long that it felt groundbreaking. I remember photographing people just sort of touching each other and how it felt at the time. So we had some time to go and sort of see people in person before this sort of resurgence of a variant that would have made that. I think that would have been impossible for us to go do a lot of that filming safely otherwise.
Yeah, safely, and also it would have taken away that personal aspect, right, of being in the same room, interviewing individuals, connecting emotionally. But absolutely, we got really lucky. I think that window has now
slammed,
slammed shut. And so I'm very grateful that at least this got out into the world in the right timing so that we could have that emotional connection. But yeah, I don't know.
We got lucky.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Gigi personally because I think all four of us were at the first show that everyone was allowed to come to in person and show your vaccination card. And it was surreal. And I never thought that being in a situation like that, indoors, unmasked, crowded room, performers on stage, is all stuff I took for granted before. So thanks, Gigi, for giving us a couple of really good shows this summer. And we know that live drag will be back again. And Gigi, while I've got you here, is there anything you want to talk about, anything that you want to share with our audiences not related to the documentary?
Yeah, you know, we are back on pause again from having in-person shows, and that is really difficult. It's really, really hard for me personally and for all of the performers in town. We desperately want to perform. We need to perform. It's an outlet that's crucial to a lot of our well-being. And we can't do that right now. And I just want to make a plea for people to go get vaccinated, because when you do, then we can have events again. You know, a drag show is a really kind of magical in-person experience that doesn't go so well with a lot of mitigation measures. So we're just holding out until we can get cases back down again. And so, you know, I think we all want this. I know you all would love to come to a drag show as much as I'd love to put one on and perform, but we have to get control of this situation in our community in order to do that safely. So I don't know when we're going to be back. I'm super hopeful that maybe we can have a New Year's show. So that's my challenge I'd like to issue to everybody is just, let's get this under control, Juno, so that we can have an amazing start to 2022 with a fabulous New Year's drag show.
I'm hopeful about that too. I can see it on your face and hear it in your voice. You need that sparkle back in your life. Yes. Well, we do have one thing to look forward to very soon, tomorrow night, the premiere of Queens and Kings of Juno. I wish we could all have a big watch party, right? But let's focus on the positive. Where do we tune in for the premiere?
So a few places.
Yeah. It's streaming in a couple of places online. I know that you can find it on Facebook if Facebook doesn't go down again. And I think you might even be able to find it in two places on Facebook because there were some glitching errors there.
Also on Instagram. Yeah. So trying to hit both of those platforms.
Which is just Facebook in a square.
Yes.
And you'll be able to find it afterwards. It's going to live on our YouTube. And it will be on television as well, but I'm not sure exactly when it's scheduled. I think Kelly would be able to.
So it'll be scheduled at the same time. So if you do have cable and you're able to access our broadcast, you can watch it on TV as well.
And what about 360 TV online?
Yeah, it should be paired up with that. So
great. Great. So lots of options. And if you missed any of that or forgot, just go check out our website and all the information will be there. Gigi, what do you plan to do tomorrow night? Where are you going to watch? How are you going to watch?
I am going to figure out the technology in my living room, and I'm going to watch with DJ Sparkle Toes and just take it all in. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
That's great. Paige and Rasha, anything else you want to share about the documentary before we say goodbye today?
I just want to say thank you so much for everybody who helped us along the way because, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, like, you cannot do this alone, and it definitely takes the trust and help from the individuals who participate in your films to actually make the story happen. So I just cannot express enough gratitude for everybody who volunteered and gave their time and their emotions and were just vulnerable on camera. That was everything.
Yeah, we asked people to engage on some really, really intimate subjects and some really deep subjects. We talked about race and we talked about gender and we talked about being comfortable in the community that you're from and, you know, creating a family when you can't, you know, really rely on the family that you were born with. And I think for people to do that with me, who they sort of know, and with Paige, who they were just meeting, I feel really lucky that people were willing to engage with us on that and do it in such a way that we could present a film about it.
Well, I just want to thank you both for putting this together. I'm really excited to see it tomorrow night. 9 o'clock is the premiere. It'll be online, 360 TV, Facebook. You'll find it. Mm-hmm. And Gigi, thanks for being with us today. It was great to hear about your experience with it as well.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks, Gigi.
We'll see you all again soon.
Yeah. Thank you both. You're amazing.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Well, there are so many questions swirling in the air about COVID booster shots. My last guest, Gigi Monroe, emphasized the importance of getting vaccinated. But there are lots of questions about when I should get one, a booster. Am I eligible now? How much longer should I wait? How do I get one? So here to answer our questions about that from the city and borough of Juno, Denise Koch. Hi, Denise.
Hello. Thanks for having me on today. And I appreciate Gigi Monroe also plugging vaccination.
Me too. Well, you are part of the team that's handling the COVID response, so that's no easy job. We'll just do a little Q&A about the booster, the vaccine, how this all works, just to make it really clear for people. So the first question is about who's already received the vaccine. So the state knows who has already received it. Will the CBJ or the state or Bartlett call people to set them up for a booster appointment if they're eligible?
Well, first of all, I just want to really thank you for this opportunity to speak to the citizens of Juno about the COVID vaccine booster clinic. Unfortunately, our public health resources are stretched pretty thin right now, so we aren't able to call people to schedule vaccine appointments for them. However, the good news is it is really easy for people to register themselves to receive a free COVID Pfizer booster shot at our clinic that's coming up. The best way to do that is to go to juno.org/vaccine But if people have difficulty navigating that system, you could also call our COVID hotline, which is 586-6000. That's 586-6000. And our next booster vaccine clinic, which is for the Pfizer vaccine, we're holding this Friday, October 8th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. in Centennial Hall. And again, Saturday, October 9th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Centennial Hall.
And at this clinic, you can get your first or second Pfizer shot vaccination, or you can get a Pfizer booster. But if you didn't get Pfizer, if you got Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, what would you do then?
So, yes, you are correct. Although we have been talking about this as a Pfizer vaccine booster clinic, we very, very much welcome anyone who wants to come in for their first or second Pfizer vaccination. However, I know there are people who are interested in other vaccine manufacturers from either Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. And the best way to register for those vaccines would really be through the same resource, going to, once again, juno.org/vaccine. And when you get to that website, there'll be a sign up for the October 8th and 9th Pfizer booster, but then there's another button that says all appointments. And when you click that all appointments button, that's how you can make appointments for Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, or even Pfizer. If you can't make it to this Friday or Saturday's clinic, there are a number of providers around town that have many, many vaccine appointments available.
So who is eligible to get a booster? I'm trying to determine if I would be eligible based on my occupation. Maybe you can help make that a little more clear.
Sure. There's a pretty wide number of people who are eligible for their Pfizer vaccine booster shot. And that includes people who are over 65, residents who are in residents and staff who work in long care or congregate care settings. If you're over the age of 18, but you have underlying medical conditions that can include everything from asthma to diabetes to cancer to being a smoker, they are also eligible. And then the other class of people who are eligible are people who are over the age of 18, but you work in a high-risk setting. And there's no hard and fast rule for that. But in general, we're talking about people who are either first responders, healthcare workers, people who work in congregate care settings, teachers, or anybody who works in a school building. We've seen lots of teachers come through the last clinic, which was great. People who, for example, are bus drivers, grocery store workers, people who work at the post office, anyone who really has a high level of interaction with the general public.
And then do you think it will eventually be opened to more groups like they did with the first round of vaccine rollouts?
That is possible, but that is what we do here at CBJ. And I should say that this is a collaborative effort between CBJ and Bartlett and our partners at the State Public Health. And we are following CDC and FDA guidelines. So if CDC opens their eligibility, then we would open our eligibility as well.
Now, is the Pfizer booster the same dosage as the first and second shot? And can you expect the same or the possibility of the same side effects?
Yes. Yes, really, to both of those. It is the same dosage as the first and second shot. The potential for side effects is the same with the booster as it was for the first and second shot.
So the vaccine the clinic that you mentioned is coming up this Friday and Saturday. What do people need to know if they are planning to come? For example, if they can't find their vaccine card or something like that.
That's a great question. If you cannot find your vaccine card, I would really encourage you to reach out to your medical provider. And what they do, there's a system, a statewide system called VacTrack, and your medical provider can look you up in that system, and they can help you get another card. The other option that you have, if you've been vaccinated in the state of Alaska, is the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has an immunization request form on their website that you fill out, and they also look you up in the state's VacTrack system, and they can generate a new vaccination card for you.
Oh, that's great. We are running out of time, so one quick question left. When do you think that the CDC and FDA will approve the vaccine for children?
Oh, yes, that's something on the top of all of our minds. What we are hearing is that it could be possibly as early as late October, but probably more likely in November. And once CDC and FDA approve that vaccine for children who are aged 5 to 11, then we'll be working with our partners to set up vaccine clinics for that age group.
Denise Koch, thank you so much for being part of CBJ's team to manage the community COVID response and for answering my questions today.